Today on the Travel Guys.
In the travel news, will airlines be able to just ignore traveler complaints under the latest directive from the Trump administration? United Airlines is breaking precedent with a new offer for not-so-frequent flyers. And we tell you about some beautiful new trains Amtrak has on the tracks. Those stories next in the news.
In our Smarter Traveler Update at 11:22, we have tips on spring break trips, when and where to go, plus an update for folks who are heading to the airport without a real ID.
New Zealand is constantly rated as a place people want to visit. It's on a lot of bucket lists. It's not easy for me to say, but it is on a lot of bucket lists. At 11:35, road reporter Clayton Whitehead joins us to recap his recent visit to the land of the Kiwis and offer some tips for your down under adventure.
In our odds and ends bucket list, at 11:55, we're going to take a look at why civilian airspace was closed in El Paso with no warning last week. Was it really a party balloon that caused all the ruckus?
Yeah, and it's just, you can be on the radio. You'll just have to learn to talk first. I'm sorry that whatever I had is contagious there, Mr. Romano. Speaking of ruckus, right here on the radio, welcome to the latest edition of the Travel Guys.
On the road again.
Welcome, my friends, to another edition of the Travel and Entertainment Guys. Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano with you. Thanks for coming along. It's been a week since we got together. A lot of stuff under the bridge. First of all, as our friends on the card show had mentioned to all of you, happy Valentine's Day. Can't remember when we've had a show that fell on Valentine's Day before, but would imagine about 7 years ago or something.
Something like that.
Right. And I hope you've been enjoying the Winter Olympics. It's been kind of fun. I think the highlight was the cross-country skier who admitted that he had cheated on his wife or girlfriend on world round television in hopes that that she would forgive him. I'm waiting for updates. So watch for that. Won't say much more in case you've taped and you're watching it on relay, on playback, which a lot of people do because there's so much going on all the time. What's your favorite Winter Olympic event?
I've always liked the competitive skating because I'm an old Tonya Harding, Nancy Kerrigan. Remember that? That was like 1,000 years ago. When they really got after it, and it was big scandal time at the Olympics. But there are always to that point and to yours, the U.S. figure skater who turned in that amazing performance and then this completely fell flat on his face and didn't even medal in a competition that he was expected to win. So the Olympics are full of stories of people rising from the ashes and people falling back to them again. And so I think that's what makes it the most interesting and entertaining. It would be fun to go. It's a travel program, so it would be fun, I think, to go to the Olympics sometime. I have never gone, but the crush of people, the security, all of that stuff. To me, it's fun to watch the Olympics and then say, ooh, that's a really pretty place. I'm going to go there when all of those people aren't there. It seems as though everything is going remarkably well, and that must be a incredible thing to organize with all of those different sites and the security and all of that stuff. So it looks like things are going well.
Yeah, well, the Olympics will be down in L.A. In a couple of years. My daughter and in fact my wife as well have signed up, put in their bid to try and be selected to purchase tickets. I wish them well. My daughter Sarah, she wants to go to the opening ceremonies, and she's a synchronized swimming queen. If she did nothing but the opening ceremonies and the synchronized swimming. The nice thing about that is most people that are listening to this don't even know what that is. And so the synchronized swimming venues are not going to be overcrowded. So
that's true.
Could find a sport that you could go and see. It may not be quite as crazy. And good luck for the with the Kings. They've got a week off here, which it's the All-Star break, and we hope they get a lot of rest. And
they will
come
be
back
undefeated
and...
for an entire week.
They can't lose a game for an entire week.
It's just I don't know. It's just sad. I'm a huge sports fan, and I wish that there was a reason to get excited about our basketball team. But every time there seems to be a glimmer of hope, it goes away, and it's years before it comes back. If you look, since the Kings have been in Sacramento, and you compare them to other teams, you will find that our record for futility is pretty much unmatched in the NBA. It's a tribute to the people who go out and support the team on a regular basis, despite the fact that they haven't had a tremendous amount of success. I was listening to a game the other night, our old buddy Gary Gerald. You know, he calls a basketball game as good as anybody. I grew up listening to Bill King from the Warriors, and Gary Gerald is just, I mean, God, he's just a master, an absolute master at what he does. Anyway, we probably should get on with the program here and stop babbling.
Well, yeah, this is part of the program. Okay, at the top of every Travel Guys radio program, we bring you up to date on the travel news. Here comes the travel news theme, and I just saw Mark walk away from the screen here, which leads me to believe that he left the travel news over there on the printer, and he's back now.
This is the part of the show when you realize that you left the travel news on the desk, and the little studio here at Sports Leisure Vacations in my office is on the other end of the room, so I had to go back and get the travel news.
All right. I told everybody where you went. Let's have it. The travel
I figured
news,
you would, if for those of you who don't know, Tom is in his studio at his home, and I am in a little studio here at Sports Leisure Vacations, and because of the telephone, we can see each other and kind of be able to signal each other and stuff like that. So I'm sure Tom was just a bit alarmed when music started playing and his broadcast partner got up from his chair and walked away. But nonetheless, all right, travel news. Southwest Airlines is joining the Wi-Fi folks. They are going to use Starlink, which is arguably proving to be the most consistent of Wi-Fi services in the air. And so this started in last October. Southwest is doing, they say, a plane a day. So it's going to be mid to 2026 before they get Starlink to all of their planes. If you are a Southwest frequent flyer, you will be able to get it for free. If you've just wandered in off the streets, then you're going to have to pay a few bucks for it. But Southwest is moving forward with Wi-Fi. Some of the planes have it already. Will airlines get a free pass from the government? Comes the word from Travelers United. The Trump administration has decided that some of the proposed rules that would fine airlines for doing certain bad things that impact customers, travelers, are not going to be enforced. So you can take one of two approaches to that, and that is that less regulation will perhaps allow the airlines to present a more efficient product if they're not spending as much time on government regulations. The other approach you could take is that the airlines have never really proven themselves capable of managing themselves when it comes to customer relations. So it's only through government intervention that we are able to get some of the things that we are. So like I said, there's a wide range of opinions in that area, but the reality is that for the next 3 years, it appears as though the airlines may not have as much of an enforcement issue with some of the things that they do. So I'm talking about things like, you know, your flight doesn't leave on time, and at the 3-hour delay or a 5-hour delay or a 6-hour delay, certain things are supposed to happen according to DOT rules, and those things don't happen, and you file a complaint, and nobody ever responds. So that's, and once the airlines know that, then they will start fudging on the rules and not doing the things that they have, that they're, where their feet has been held to the fire. Whether that's a good or a bad thing for you probably depends on what you run into, what your luck is when you're traveling.
Here's something from United Airlines that they have never done before. They're handing out silver elite status. Many of the airlines, hotels, and the like have said, if you have this credit card and you do XYZ, then we will give you this level of frequent traveler status or frequent guest status. United has never done that until now. You can get silver elite status, which is the lowest on United's list of status people, but it will get you free economy plus upgrades on all of your flights. So it does have a value. This targeted mailer is giving you 70,000 miles and silver status. You have to spend $3,000 on a United credit card, fly four segments. And if you want to, you get the credit card. It's the credit card is free the first year, and then it's $150 a year. So it's a little bit of a bait and switch, but there's nothing that says you have to keep the credit card the second year. So if you are not a United frequent flyer, and there would be some advantage to you to do that, you occasionally fly with United, you might want to go to united.com, see about this offer. Fly, if you fly four segments, you're flying across the country and you're connecting, coming back, that's four segments. And then you can, you will get the advantage of being able to get upgraded seats, not first class seats, but seats within the economy cabin at no charge. Plus, you won't pay for baggage. So if you've got a couple United, you've got more than one trip that isn't designated to an airline. I know that sounds a little bit complicated, but United has a good deal if you're looking for a deal.
There you go. Did you get all that? And it did not mean that you had to get a silver medal at in any kind of an event or anything.
No. And silver status is, you know, you're not going to be the first person on the airplane. But again, if you're a person who regularly checks a bag or two, and you don't want to sit in the very back of the plane or have to pay for the privilege of not doing that, then it could save you $300-$400 on a cross country trip. Mm-hmm. So I could see somebody, you know, that was smart enough to do that. And we have a few of those people listening to this program. How do I know that? Because they tell me stories about how they work the system, and sometimes they get their ideas from us. All right, we're talking about Amtrak having some new equipment. And boy, if you go online and you look at these sleek new green trains, they are pretty cool. Amtrak.com will show you the train equipment, but they're getting new train sets in New England, upper New England, and in the upper Pacific Northwest. There is a train called the Cascades, which starts in Eugene a couple times a day and runs up to Seattle, and then you can get a connection to go on to Vancouver, pretty well-timed connections in most cases. So, or you can just take the six-hour trip from Eugene to Seattle during the day. God, it's probably one of the most scenic, beautiful Amtrak routes in the country. These new modern trains are going to have all of the plugs on them and all the stuff at your seat that you would like to have. And, you know, we were just talking about getting on an airplane and having to pay a premium for premium economy seating for enough room for your legs and your carry-on to go into your seat and stuff. Now the airline wants $150 each way across the country. On Amtrak, you don't have to pay that.
That's very cool. Did you call them train sets?
Train sets, yes.
Is that the term for big trains and
it
small
is.
Trains?
Yeah, a train with you know, four or five cars and perhaps a baggage car and a locomotive or two, that would be a train set.
Well, I always thought train sets were the Lionel train set that you put on a large piece of plywood and had at home.
Well, okay, but think about that. What did that Lionel train set that you put on the large piece of plywood, what did it consist of? It had a locomotive.
Yeah. And some cars.
For freight and passengers. Right. And
I learn something every week on the Travel Guys as well. So there you go, train sets. That sounds really cool.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, especially this route from Eugene, to me, it's some of the prettiest scenery in the country. But you have to, you know, the thing is on Amtrak, you have to not care about when you get there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't have, oh my God, I got to get there by 4 o'clock because at 5:30 I have to, you know, you forget that. On Amtrak, it's just like, well, you know, when you get there, you get there. And if and Amtrak is a lot more dependable than it used to be. The other thing is, you know, like going to San Francisco or San Jose, the Capital Corridor trains, guess what, folks? Parking at the Amtrak Depot in Sacramento is a heck of a lot cheaper than parking in San Francisco.
You bet.
You can have a glass of wine on the train on the way down there or the way back, you know, and you can put your feet up and you can relax. And it's like $20, $25 each way. So if you're driving to San Francisco by yourself, the cost of gas and tolls alone is going to pretty much approach that. And what a nice way, you know, you go down, what you do is you take the train to Emeryville. That's the transfer point to San Francisco. And then you get on a bus. The layover in Emeryville is like 5 minutes, long enough for people to get off the train and get on the bus. And then the bus zips over to San Francisco, makes a couple, three stops in different places. You can get off. There's, what, six trains a day on weekdays and four or five on the weekends. So you can go down and spend the day or part of the day or whatever it is you want to do. I the traffic to San Francisco is so awful. People who go with sports leisure vacations to shows and ball games and stuff like that tell me that, you know, regularly it now takes 2.5, sometimes 3 hours to get back from San Francisco. So if you don't have to drive that, and Amtrak offers you that option. So just it's a thought, you know, there's a lot of cool places. You could go down to San Jose for the day.
Mm-hmm.
Some fun stuff. All right. Let's see. A couple other quick stories here. Last item, American Airlines unveils centennial themed dining options. Boy, American Airlines has been getting a lot of criticism lately. Their flight attendants wrote a letter and said, you know, management needs to get their SHI, you know, whatever together. And it's just not. At American Airlines is just not going well. Anyway, it's their centennial year. And so inspired by the 1920s, the domestic first class menu will feature a Waldorf salad, beef Wellington. Back in coach, they will get yesterday's McDonald's McDoubles. And oh, no, that's not what it says. But anyways, they're doing some special things on American Airlines up in the forward cabin. If they did some things better in the back cabin, they'd probably be more popular with their travelers and their employees. And that's your travel news for today.
And we are the Travel Guys, Mark and Tom, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. And don't forget now, if you haven't got any plans for Valentine's dinner, I'm not telling you to go to Rudy's Hideaway and eat, because they're sold out. In fact, my daughter works there, my youngest, and normally on a Friday night they seat about 250 people.
Uh-huh.
Last night they had 375 people.
Wow.
So you can see that they're very busy,
but
you can
please don't call me a
Rudy's to go. Get Rudy's to go on Valentine's Day.
Ooh.
You can go ahead when they around 4 o'clock this afternoon when they get things going. You can go to their menu, order up what you want, bring it home, light up some candles, and have yourself Rudy's at home. Also, just a quick reminder, if you got a crab feed coming up and you need some fresh Dungeness crab, still crab season, Rudy's can get you a bulk Dungeness crab, and they can also take care of any kind of a crab feed that you might be thinking of having. But if you just want to go in for some clam chowder and a good steak, or obviously a really, really nice lobster, Rudy's Hideaway and Lobster House. Where is it?
Just off of Highway 50 at Hazel.
There you go, my friends. Okay, next up, it's our Smarter Traveler segment right here on the Travel Guys. Hard to find a live radio at 11:21 and a half here. It's Mark Hoffman, Tom Romano. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys back at the studios. We've got Anthony Lucas. Anthony, Mark and I were wondering if you have been watching some of the Olympics, and better yet, what is your favorite winter Olympic sport to watch?
Yeah, I'm actually watching it right now in the Sacktown Sports Studios. I'm watching the skeleton sled, which is really growing on me. It's insane. They're throwing themselves headfirst at like a 90-degree turn on a sled. It's crazy. Historically, I've loved like the ski jump. I snowboard, so watching everything snowboarding is always really impressive because I have the context of snowboarding. But I just love the Winter Olympics in general.
Skeleton. You know, if I had the opportunity to interview a skeletal, or whatever they're called, and ask them what possessed them to want to do that, or better yet, find the person who thought that up for the first time. You know, luge is one thing, going down feet first, pretty much out of control. But skeleton, I don't know. What country invented that? Anybody know?
No idea, but I assume that someone saw someone doing a luge and was like, I could do that head first, and they just did it.
And probably had been drinking a lot, I'm guessing.
Now with luge, they have doubles where one person lays on top of the other. In fact, they had the team luge last night. That was great fun to watch. But they don't have two people on the skeletal, one laying on the other, do they?
I don't think so, no. Not that I've seen. That'd be pretty crazy.
Crazy enough as it is. Crazy enough.
All right. Back to the travel guys, Mark and Tom, and it's time for our Smarter Traveler segment, Tips on Spring Break Trips. Maybe we should ask Anthony if he has... He's a young buck. What was your favorite spring break trip back in the day?
I mean, I've always lived Northern California. I went to college in San Francisco, so my spring break was staying in San Francisco or just the Bay Area in general. I love going to Pacifica. They always have good events around spring break. Beaches. You can never go wrong with beaches.
Yeah. Of course, in San Francisco, spring break beaches, bring your jacket, huh?
Absolutely.
Exactly.
And your wetsuit.
All right. Well, we have an article here that talks a little bit about, gives some tips about spring break. These are from our good buddy Chris Elliott, who wrote this for his own website, Elliott Confidential, elliott.org, two L's and two T's. If you want to go there, some great information on travel. There's a free and a paid section of the website. When is spring break in the United States? This year, because Easter is late, some school districts are sticking with the break, traditional break over Easter. Some have broken away from that and are doing March. Colleges are doing all sorts of things. So the answer to this is that the spring break this year is more spread out, probably over a 6 or 7 week period as opposed to a 4 to 6 week period. This helps a little bit because it spreads the traffic for spring break out if you're going at a peak time. If you are going at a non-peak time, it doesn't help you as much because, again, the full season of spring break is kind of spreading out a little bit into what would normally be shoulder season. So shoulder for spring break this year is the last couple weeks of February, which is basically starting next week. And the shoulder season for the other end would be after the second week of April. So late April would be the other shoulder season. Those are good times to go. Either late February, very early March, or late April if you're trying to avoid the crowds. The crowds are headed to Orlando, to San Juan, Puerto Rico, to Myrtle Beach, to Las Vegas, it says here, which will make the Las Vegas people happy. Of course, one thing that you can think about, those are all destinations in the Southern Belt, so people are looking for warmer weather places. So if you've got a colder weather place, that's not a ski destination or something like that, and you've always thought, gee, you know, I've always wanted to go to Victoria, Canada in the wintertime. Why, then this would be an opportunity to do that. Avoid the weekends. You definitely want to stay off of the weekends. Flying midweek, not only for spring break, but generally just about any time, can save you money, specifically Tuesdays and Wednesdays. I've found recently that Wednesday is the lowest airfare day. Here's the problem. In some places, in business type destinations, hotels are highest weekdays and lowest weekends. So if you arrive on a Tuesday or Wednesday, you're going to pay that higher hotel rate. You got a better airfare deal. You fly on the weekend, you might get a better hotel rate in some places, but you're going to pay more for your airfare. So it's really a difficult thing to try to make both of those things work for you. But generally, In vacation destinations, avoiding weekends can be best. So if you can check in on Sunday night and leave on Thursday or leave on Friday, then you're likely to get a better rate than people who are staying over the weekend. Does that make sense, Tom?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think most folks, if they've done a little bit of travel, have experienced that.
The thing that you want to do is you want to zig when everybody else zags. And so this means that if you go to a place, if you're going to Orlando and you're going to go to the theme parks, then you want to be there when they open in the morning, because some people are too lazy to get out of bed at that time, and you'll get a couple hours before those people get out of bed. And the other thing is that, or you can stay late in the evening, but I found early in the morning for theme parks and other destinations, other attractions, really is the soft spot now. If something opens at 9 o'clock, the general public won't be there till 10 or 10:30. Heck, you can be there and be gone and be on to your second place by the time everybody gets out of bed. So getting up early, but thinking about it, zigging when other people zag, you know, do your meals if you have lunch early or late, or you do dinner if you can do dinner at 5 o'clock, although I will say a lot more people are eating early now on the road than ever used to before. It used to be only on the weekends would you see a crowd at a restaurant at 5 o'clock. Just having gone through the Florida Keys, now a lot of restaurants were already very busy at 5 o'clock. So the early dining thing is becoming more popular. So you might have to go at 4:30 to be an early diner. But if it doesn't matter to you, then that's a time that you can get in or get a reservation or not have to wait as long. So for the spring break, like every other peak business time, it is, you know, it's a time that you need to think about, do a little homework. Also, remember, AI is your new travel agent. So you can ask AI all kinds of questions, and about 75-80% of the time, you'll get a pretty solid answer. And the thing is, don't be afraid to fact check information that you get from AI. Also, business class, the upgrades on planes, the demand has backed off slightly. So you might be able to, if you're looking around, don't be afraid if you're going to pay to upgrade your flight. Get on the airline website and see, oh, here's 20 ways to get from Sacramento to LaGuardia Airport on one day, but three of them are significantly cheaper. So if you're flexible on when you want to go, you're willing to take a little bit longer layover at your connecting point, then sometimes you can save some money that way also. So good luck on your spring break trip. Oh, hey, wait a minute. One more thing here before we go, Tom. We had a quick little update here for folks who are going to the airport without a passport, or other form of acceptable ID, like a real ID. You don't have that. You're dependent upon getting through security without it. You have to go online and pay the fee before you go to the airport. It's a $45 fee. It's good for 10 days of travel. You can get you can go online, pay it, get the receipt. You're going to need that receipt when you get to the airport. If you haven't already done that, they're going to get you out of line. They're going to make you do that on your phone and before you can get back in line. So if you don't have a real ID or a passport or other form of acceptable ID, you need to do this one little step ahead of time, and then you will be able to zip through security just like everybody else. Of course, the other thing that you could do too is get a real ID or an updated passport, and then you wouldn't have that hassle.
Off to New Zealand with Clayton Whitehead, the Sports Leisure road reporter, right after we take a short time out, right here with the Travel Guys.
We're going places with that Sports Leisure flair, a world of adventure, and we take you there.
The Phantom of the Opera is coming back to Northern California. It will be in San Francisco early this summer in June. Sports Leisure Vacations is offering some day trips to go down and see Phantom if you would like. It is proving to be amazingly popular. We've already filled a couple of coaches, and we have one more date to go. So if you're interested in seeing Phantom of the Opera, if you're an old school theater person, or if you're a new school theater person and you've just never seen this classic show, it will be in San Francisco in June. Sports Leisure Vacations has a package that will include transportation to San Francisco, great tickets to see the show, a chance to have dinner, and then whisk you back home. A great way to avoid the traffic and see one of the most popular shows, Broadway shows ever, Phantom of the Opera. Also, I wanted to mention to you again about the special Route 66 show that's coming to the California Automobile Museum on February the 24th. Sports Leisure Vacations has a special show in the middle of the day at 1 o'clock. Tickets are free, but capacity is limited. We're down to about 20 seats left. You can give our office a call if you'd like to come. We are having the official videographer for the centennial of the old highway, the Mother Road, is going to be our guest. I have seen some of the film cuts that he will show that day. Lots of old great stories. If you are a fan of Off the Beaten Track and you're considering, or you've already scheduled, a trip down Route 66 for its centennial year, this would be an awesome way to find out some of the great places to visit along the way. Give Sports Leisure Vacations a call at 916-361-2051. If you're a supporter of KVIE, our public television station here in town, they have special shows in the morning and the evening. You can contact the station directly to find out how to participate in those programs. Route 66 at the California Automobile Museum on February the 24th.
Hey there, it's Mark and Tom and Clayton Whitehead, the travel and entertainment guys, coming to you from the land down under. Well, not exactly. I don't know. I'd like to do that show sometime, go all the way the other side of the world and do a live broadcast. We'll think about that. Here every week on Travel Guys, thanks for coming along. By the way, links to our special guests and so much more at TravelGuysRadio.com. As we had mentioned, last week, Clayton was just flying in as we were doing our radio show from New Zealand this time around. So welcome back to the mainland here.
It's great to be home.
Clayton took off with a group of Sports Leisure travelers to New Zealand, which was the second part of the Down Under trip. He went to Australia a couple of years ago. And he had a pretty extensive itinerary. You were down there for a couple weeks or longer.
Almost three weeks.
Wow. And New Zealand, what? Just to give us an idea, I mean, it doesn't look that big on the map, but how big if you were comparing New Zealand to, say, California or something?
New Zealand's going to be a little bit bigger than California. It's kind of long and skinny like we are, but it's a little bit taller from the top of the North Island to the bottom of the South Island than we are as a state. There are actually a lot of similarities between California and New Zealand. Wine is big. The terrain changes so quickly. I mean, that's something I really had to wrap my arms around when I moved here from the East Coast. I had never lived in a place, one, where you could drive to a 10,000-foot tall mountain, nor one you could get to in only about an hour's drive. You know, things change so quickly on the West Coast, and similarly into New Zealand. You will be on a sunny beach in the morning, and by afternoon you'll be in a rainforest. The next day you'll be walking on a glacier. It has an amazing diversity of geological interest and history, and of course you're never very far from the beach, because unlike California, they have beach on all four sides. We only have it on one.
And, you know, if you told folks you were going to California for a couple of weeks, you wouldn't necessarily run out of things to see in this state in 2 weeks, from the redwoods up north all the way down to San Diego and out into the desert and, of course, high mountains and stuff like that. So it doesn't seem as unreasonable that you might spend a couple weeks. Was that long enough?
Oh, every time I go down under, I always wish I had a little more time. Ours was an 18-day itinerary. The last time I did New Zealand, it was 21 days. I consciously cut a little bit out of that original itinerary, and I will get into all the nuances of tour planning right now, but I think there were good reasons for changing the itinerary. In the last trip, basically, our goal was to circle both islands. So picture Route 66, if you will. Okay. I mean, the only way to see the road is to keep moving, right? So that means lots of one-night stays. And that's what I had the last time I did an all-New Zealand tour. Lots of terrain, lots of scenery, lots of amazing stuff, but also lots of one-night stays. So I consciously changed that this time. We had all 2- and 3-night stays, which certainly made for a much more leisurely itinerary, but obviously it means we couldn't cover quite as much ground.
How long does it take to fly to New Zealand?
By the calendar or by my watch?
Well, explain what you mean.
Well, because of the international dateline and, of course, time zones, it actually takes 3 days by the calendar to get to New Zealand. If you leave on a Monday, you land on a Wednesday. And I kind of understand that. I mean, I've been working with time zones my entire professional life, and I'm good with math. But still, the fact that a day can just disappear somehow just seems wrong.
So when you come home, you get home the day that you leave?
Not only do you get home the day you leave, but you get home way earlier than you left. We left New Zealand at about 8 o'clock at night, and we landed in San Francisco at 11 o'clock in the morning.
So you found the day that you lost along the way.
Yeah, but no. I remember the last time I did a trip to Australia a couple years ago, I had a lady, and as luck would have it, her birthday was that missing day. So we had quite a little event for her on the plane, but still, you know, the day was gone forever. It's like being born on leap day. You know, you only get it once every so often.
Fascinating, fascinating, Clayton. We're talking with Clayton Whitehead, road reporter for Sports Leisure Vacations, and president, I think, is the title. Clayton, in the past, I know that Sports Leisure, and a lot of folks do this, they'll go down under and they'll visit Australia and New Zealand on because you're already kind of already there, going to take you a little extra time. But you've decided, Sports Leisure's decided to split that up into two different trips. And based on what you said about what all there is to see in New Zealand, I kind of see why. How's that working out? What is the advantages and disadvantages of a split trip to the lands down under?
Well, a lot of tour companies, and God bless them all, I love them all, a lot of tour companies will offer expeditions that include both Australia and New Zealand. And I have done that twice. I didn't like either of them. I was already suggesting that even at 18 days, this itinerary wasn't quite long enough. And my last trip to Australia at 21 days wasn't quite long enough. The only thing those two countries share, in my humble opinion, is that they happen to both be in the Pacific Ocean and in the Southern Hemisphere. And if you look on a globe, which is about the size of a basketball, they seem really close. But you know what? They're not. I think if we would just use this scenario, let's say we have a friend in France. They've never been to America. And they want to come see the United States. And they want to see the Grand Canyon and New York City. How would you advise that person from France? If you were me, you would say, no, no, no. Those two places are thousands of miles apart. They have nothing in common. They don't connect at all. Let's do your first trip to the States. Let's do something in New England, or keep it to the East Coast, and we'll get you New York and a few other nice things. And then you need to plan another trip and come over and see the Great Southwest and the Grand Canyon and all that good stuff out there. Well, similarly, Australia and New Zealand are very, very, very different places. They're very different places. And yes, they're both about a 15-hour flight away, but I think if you have a real interest, do some homework, decide which one interests you the most, and then go to that one first. And spend a good 2, 3, or even 4 weeks really exploring the country fully. You will need that much time.
So let's talk a little bit about the people and the places that you saw in New Zealand. I'm curious to know, New Zealanders seem like a fairly knowledgeable people. They don't weigh in on world events very often, maybe because it's the size of their country and their population and whatever. But give us a little bit of an insight into the people. And so for folks who are listening today and maybe not planning to go with a tour company and buy a package, but might be going on their own, what are some of the places in New Zealand that they really should see? And what did you think were some of the highlights?
Well, I think you definitely have to plan a North and South Island adventure. Just to see one or the other, you're going to miss a lot. So you have to do the North and you have to do the South. So then that leads to the question, how do you get from the south of the North Island to the north of the South Island? How do you connect? And your options are either a ferry or to fly. It can be a very, very rough ferry crossing. So I recommend flying. But of course, if you're going over on your own and you're renting a car, well, then, you know, you might make the ferry option. I just suggest to have a pocket full of Dramamine just in case. And if you're driving, that brings up another thing. Of course, this was a part of the English Commonwealth, and they did not have a revolution and separate the way we did. So they still drive on the, air quotes, wrong side of the road. And that can be really challenging for U.S. drivers or anyone who's accustomed to driving on the right side of the road. Mm-hmm. And especially because there's many one-lane passages, especially on the South Island in New Zealand. So truly, I know how it is to take the driving test and scan over the DMV book and not really pay attention. But truly, if you're going down there and you're going to be driving a car, you have got to get online and find yourself a tutorial about the road signs so that you know when you've got the right of way and you know when you don't, when you're coming up on those one-lane passages.
Wow. We're talking with Clayton Whitehead of Sports Leisure Vacations. He's telling us a little bit about his recent adventure to New Zealand and talking a little bit about some of the people and the places that in particular his group enjoyed. He was traveling with some mature travelers. If you're a younger traveler, your list might be a little different than his, but undoubtedly there will be some crossover. Clayton, tell us some of the best places.
Well, you're going to go to Auckland. For two reasons. One, it's the primary city. There's lots to see and do, but also because that's the only place planes go to. You know, it's like Hawaii, right? You've got to go to Honolulu, and then you can take inter-island flights or whatever and get to other points. So you're going to go to Auckland, and I think Auckland is definitely worthy of some time. The National Museum in Wellington, the capital city, called Te Pepe, is absolutely extraordinary. It's the history of the country. It's art. It's Maori history, which is the native Polynesian population. It's English history. The English colonized and/or took over New Zealand in the mid 19th century. The two cultures get along relatively well now, though they are still having treaty issues. So it's still a little bit unsettled. It was actually refreshing to tune in on other people's politics and be completely removed from ours for 3 weeks, I will confess. Rotorua is probably one of the most popular vacation destinations, I'd say, for visitors of any age. This is in the apex of the country's geothermal area, which means steam vents, geysers, hot pots, what we'd call a hot tub.
Maybe comparable to Yellowstone area, perhaps?
Yes, like that, and even like Calistoga and places like that closer to home. Places where you can have spa activities or just take a hot bath and enjoy the geothermal waters. Some of them are a bit fragrant, but it's all part of the fun, I think.
So do people wear clothes when they go to the waters in New Zealand? Or?
It depends on which one you pick.
Okay.
Generally speaking, they're a rather modest crowd. The population down there, about 5.5 million. So one of the reasons you don't hear a lot from them on the world scene is just their relatively small population. Sheep outnumber the people literally 10 to 1. But they're a kind of a quiet, modest people. Definitely not as raucous as their neighbors over in Australia. They don't drink as much, but boy, do they have good wine. Getting involved in the wine culture, exploring wineries throughout both islands is definitely high on the list. And of course, I guess like with California and other big wine producing areas, so many of the wineries offer additional benefits like restaurants on site, hotels on site, spa activities on site, hiking activities. So the wineries are a big part of their economy, both in terms of the wine, but also in terms of the visitor product that they offer.
Okay, and we just got a... Yes, Thomas.
I was just going to say real quickly, if there was one thing you're going to bring home that you're allowed to bring home, what was it? What would it be?
Well, this is going to be a funny answer, but you asked. We went to Christchurch. Mm-hmm. My last... I had the sad opportunity to be in Christchurch exactly 1 year to the day after the big 1911 earthquake, excuse me, the 2011 earthquake that really destroyed the city. And I saw them in a state of crisis. it was really exciting to be back this time and see them in a state of regrowth and rebirth and redevelopment. One of the real sad stories, though, is that the cathedral downtown, which has always been the anchor, I mean, after all, the city is called Christ Church, right? And Christ Church is this big cathedral in the heart of downtown. They're very slowly and expensively trying to restore it. They already are $80 million in. They estimate they need another 40, which probably means they really need another 80. Anyway, they were selling damaged slate roof tiles from the original building as a fundraiser. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to cry if I talk about it. I bought two, one for a friend of mine who's very fond of the city and one for me. But it's like, that's a piece of history. Mm-hmm. That's a slate that was formed in England or somewhere in Europe in the early 1800s, shipped for who knows how many days to New Zealand. This cathedral was built, and now I own a little piece of it.
Wow, that's so cool.
Yeah, that's my cool thing.
All right, so before I let you go here, we're out of time. Why should someone go to New Zealand?
Just to explore another culture, an English-speaking culture, which makes it a bit easier, but one that's extraordinarily different from ours, uniquely different, and also to really dig in and learn a lot about the Maori culture. You'll be surprised how similar to Hawaii it is. Of course, both of them began in Polynesia, but also distinctively different and exciting. And nice people. Good food, good wine, lots of good lamb, and pork belly. I had pork belly 4 or 5 times. It just was always on the menu. I don't know if that's a recent thing or not. I don't remember it from the past. But a lot of good food for sure.
Outstanding. Thank you for taking us down under to New Zealand, Clayton. We appreciate it. It was well done. Thanks for the opportunity this morning. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys. Stick around, more to come. Hey there, Mark and Tom, the Travel and Entertainment Guys on the home stretch. Time for our odds and ends segment. We're talking about what went on in El Paso this past week.
Mark? Yeah, this was kind of weird. If you're an aviation geek, you probably already know about this. If you're not, you probably don't care. But maybe you should. Minutes before midnight on the 11th, which that would be what, Wednesday night, the FAA shut down the airspace over El Paso. They said it was going to be for 10 days. 10 days. Nothing like that has ever happened since the September 11th attacks back in 2001. And even then, it didn't last 10 days. But 10 days. Within hours, the notice was lifted. So it didn't last 10 days, it didn't last 24 hours. And everybody was trying to figure out whether or not the first thing out of the FAA was that it was a drone incursion from Mexico that they were concerned about. And then somebody pointed out that every month there are about roughly 1,000 drone incursions over the border around Texas and New Mexico. So why would that be such a big deal? I mean, 1,000 would be an average of 3 a day. Why would one be such a big deal? Everybody is hush-hush about it. Somebody obviously pushed a button a little bit too quickly. They didn't tell people what they were doing, and then when they realized they had done it, somebody undid it as quickly as they could. Turns out there's a possibility that the whole drone thing may have just been a Mylar party balloon that got into the airport's airspace. And the fact that nobody is denying or confirming that, it's just, I don't know. It's just an interesting story. Listen, if you're thinking about going to the East Coast to celebrate the nation's 250th birthday this summer, now is the time to make those plans. You've got your hotels and the like in Washington, D.C., in Philadelphia. Prices are going up. Airfares are going to go up. So if you're thinking about being a part of all of that, do it now. My company, Sports Leisure Vacations, has a couple of trips. One in the Richmond, Williamsburg area is already sold out. The one that goes to Philadelphia, New York, has a few seats still left. New York City, by the way, was the first capital of the country. When George Washington was president, he was president in New York City. Kind of interesting. All right, let's see here. What else do I have? A little deal about Frontier Airlines. I think the same thing is going to happen to them that is happening to Spirit. They are turning down and delaying aircraft deliveries. Not a good sign. Heads up, if you fly Frontier Airlines, be careful about buying tickets too far out. The airline is going to get a little smaller. If they're getting smaller, that means that they're running out of money in some way, shape, or form. We'll stay on the story and let you know. And I guess, Thomas, that's all we got for this week.
That's it. And if you can't stand to wait a whole week to hear us again, go to travelguysradio.com for the podcast or to Sactown Sports 1140. And they've got our podcast there as well.